Model Test 7.
Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now, let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11. Did you go shopping this afternoon?
Yes, but all I got was a sore foot.
What does the man mean? Question 12.
If we turn down his offer, we may not get another partner.
That's exactly what I have in mind. Yet even so, we can't afford to do business with somebody unreliable.
What can we learn from the conversation?
Question 13.
Excuse me? I'd like to request an early morning call at 6 sharp. By phone, please. I don't want to disturb my neighbors.
Okay, 6 o'clock. Which room are you in, sir?
Where does the conversation take place?
Question 14. Hey, Louise, I've got a used copy of our chemistry textbook for half price.
I'm afraid you wasted your money. Yours is the first edition, but we're supposed to be using the 3rd edition.
What has the man done? Question 15. Now, what's your problem, madam?
Oh, yes. My husband bought this yellow skirt here yesterday. It is very nice, but it's not the color I want. Have you got any blue ones?
What does the woman want to do?
Question 16. The place I've heard so much about is Los Angeles. The climate is pretty good. Year-round flowers, year-round swimming. How do you like it?
Well, the beaches are beautiful, but the people there are terribly annoyed by the dirty air. I mean, the combination of fog, smoke, and automobile exhaust. There isn't enough wind to blow it away.
What does the man think of Los Angeles?
Question 17. I hear you are moving to an apartment. Can you tell me why?
Actually, I didn't want to move. It would be more expensive to live outside the college, but I just can't bear the noise made by the people living next door.
Why does the woman want to move?
Question 18. I wonder if you have time to go to the food store today. We have almost run out of bread.
You'd better do that. I haven't got my report ready yet, but my boss needs it tomorrow.
Why isn't the man going to do the shopping?
Now you'll hear the two long conversations.
Conversation 1.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, Judy. The instructor really liked my sketches, but she hasn't seen my painting yet.
Oh, there seems to be something wrong with it, though.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It doesn't look right to me either.
I think I know. Look here at the sky. It just seems to fit in with the other colors of the painting.
What do you mean? Everyone knows the sky is blue.
Well, that depends. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't, as sunset can be full of reds and purples. Well, even now. Look at it now, Jim. What do you see?
It looks blue to me.
Look again. Do you see a kind of yellowish-brown color?
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean.
By adding some tan to your sky, I think you'll get more actual picture and the color will look more natural.
I think I'll try that. How do you get to know so much about painting? Have you taken a lot of courses?
No, actually, but my father is an artist.
A professional artist?
Oh, yeah. When we were kids, he always talked to us about his work.
I wish we could talk some more. How about going for a cup of coffee? I'm ready for a break.
I'd love to, but I have to study for a history exam. In fact, I was just on my way to the study group, and I think I'm already late. Maybe tomorrow?
Great. I'll meet you at the student center after my class, a little after 3, okay?
Sounds good. Get around now.
Bye, Judy.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What are the speakers mainly discussing?
Question 20. What does the woman suggest the man do?
Question 21. What does the woman plan to do next?
Conversation 2.
I understand you are taking the American Literature Seminar this semester, Jim. How do you like it?
I find it very interesting. Our first reading assignment was the book Travels with Charlie by John Steinbeck.
I've heard that it includes descriptions of many different parts of the United States.
Yes, that's quite true. Steinbeck and his pet poodle, Charlie, had lots of adventures. They got caught in a hurricane in New York. In Maine, they met migrant farm workers, and in California, they visited some of Steinbeck's old friends.
Well, that's certainly a lively guide for travelers. Do you think the book is an artistic masterpiece as well?
That's a good question. I've been giving it some serious thought because I'm writing my seminar paper on that exact topic. I guess that Steinbeck is a talented writer, but not a great one.
What would you say is his strongest point as a writer?
Steinbeck's description of the various states is the best part of the book, I think. Although I haven't been there yet, I feel that I know not only the terrain of Texas and Idaho, but also the character of the people who live there.
Yes, I've often learned that Steinbeck can communicate a sense of place very clearly. Does the book have any central theme to hold all these descriptions together?
That's what I am trying to explain in my paper. I think Steinbeck's theme is the urge to travel. He captures the curiosity, the desire for experiences, and the need to expand one's horizons that motivate all of us towards intellectual growth.
Questions 22 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 22. What was Jim's first reading assignment for his American Literature seminar?
Question 23. What does Jim think about Steinbeck as a writer?
Question 24. What does Jim admire most in Steinbeck's book?
Question 25. According to Jim, what is Steinbeck's central theme?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. Strikes are very common in Britain. They are extremely harmful to its industries. In fact, there are other countries in Western Europe that lose more working days through strikes every year than Britain. The trouble with the strikes in Britain is that they occur in essential industries. There are over 495 unions in Britain. Some unions are very small. Over 20 have more than 100,000 members. Unions do not exist only to demand higher wages. They also educate their members. They provide benefits for the sick and try to improve working conditions. Trade unioners say that we must thank the unions for the great improvement in working conditions in the last 100 years. It is now against the law for union members to go on strike without the support of their union. This kind of strike is called the unofficial strike, and was common until recently. Employers feel that unofficial strikes were most harmful because they would not be predicted. However, these unofficial strikes still occur from time to time, and some unions have also refused to cooperate with the law. As a result, the general picture of the relations between workers and employers in Britain has gone from bad to worse.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. In what way are strikes in Britain different from those in other European countries?
Question 27. Why are British employers so afraid of unofficial strikes?
Question 28. What conclusion can be drawn from this passage? Passage 2. Deep Springs is an American college. It is an unusual college. It is high in the White Mountains in California, not in a college town. The campus is a collection of old buildings with no beautiful classrooms. The only college-like thing about Deep Springs is its library. Students can study from the 17,000 books 24 hours a day. The library is never crowded, as there are only 24 well-qualified male students at the college. In addition, there are only 5 full-time professors. These teachers believe in the idea of this college. They need to believe in it. They do not get much money. In fact, their salaries are only about $9,000 a year, plus room and meals. The school gives the young teachers, as well as the students, something more important than money. "There is no place like Deep Springs," says a second-year student from New York State. "Most colleges today are much the same, but Deep Springs is not afraid to be different." He says that students at his college are in a situation quite unlike the other schools. Students are there to learn, and they cannot run away from problems. There is no place to escape to. At most colleges, students can close their books and go to a film. They can go out to restaurants or to parties. Deep Springs students have completely different alternatives. They can talk to each other or to their teachers. Another possible activity is to go to the library to study. They might decide to do some work. A student who doesn't want to do any of these activities can go for a walk in the desert. Deep Springs is far from the world of restaurants and cinemas. There is not even a television set on campus.
Questions 29 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29.
What is true of the campus of Deep Springs College? Question 30.
What is the total number of students at Deep Springs College? Question 31. Which of the following is mentioned in the passage?
Question 32. What can students at Deep Springs do in their spare time?
Passage 3.
Although unemployment is very serious, it would be much worse if we were not taking the combined action that we, as a government, and the Bank of England have been taking. The fact remains that 2,000 people have lost their jobs every day during the last year, while youth unemployment is down to 938,000. People between the ages of 16 and 24 now account for a full 38% of those unemployed. And that's going to have fierce
reactions
across the whole society, as the Order Commission warned earlier this week. The other thing worth noting about these jobless figures is that the disparity between the claimant count by those people who are signing on for job seekers' allowance and the ILO measure, which is a broadened measure of those people who without work but not necessarily claiming benefits, is continuing. Now the government is looking at this already. And there are some suggestions that one may be the case. One theory is that people who've lost their jobs simply depending on their partners rather than signing on for benefits themselves. Now, there are a couple of rays of hope. First of all, we've had earnings figures out today. Earnings figures in the 3 months to June were up to 2.5%, and that's improvement on the previous situation. Potentially, that's good news for consumer spending. However, It should be borne out that's within the private sector, which is counting for 80% of the workforce earnings running rising by some 2.1%. The majority of that increase is in the public sector, which again doesn't bode well for the government's attempts to ease back on public spending.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 33.
What does the passage mainly talk about?
Question 34.
What is ILO measure?
Question 35.
What does the passage say about earnings figures?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now, listen to the passage.
In Britain, the idea of the welfare state could be said to have begun with the Poor Relief Act in 1601. This acknowledged that society, as a whole, had a responsibility towards its weaker members, people who suffered as a result of circumstances that they could not control, such as illness or inability to work. Before that, religious orders were the only organizations to look after people who had no one to care for them. The Poor Relief Act was revised in the 19th century. In the years before the 1914 to 1918 war, the Liberal Prime Minister, Lloyd George, introduced a pension for people over 70 and some form of compensation for the people injured while working in industry. The basis of today's welfare states in Britain was laid in 1942 by a former director of the London School of Economics, Sir William Beveridge. He proposed a radical scheme for the abolition of poverty through a system of social insurance. But his proposal didn't stop there. He said that, in order to reconstruct British society on a more just and democratic basis, other evils had to be tackled. They were, he said, disease, ignorance, squalor, and idleness. After considerable political struggle, an Education Act was passed in 1944. It abolished school fees, it raised the school leaving age from 14 to 15, and provided for further education until the age of 18. In 1948, the establishment of the National Health Service gave every Briton the right to free medical, dental, and eye treatment.
Now the passage will be read again.
In Britain, the idea of the welfare state could be said to have begun with the Poor Relief Act in 1601. This acknowledged that society, as a whole, had a responsibility towards its weaker members, people who suffered as a result of circumstances that they could not control, such as illness or inability to work. Before that, religious orders were the only organizations to look after people who had no one to care for them. The Poor Relief Act was revised in the 19th century. In the years before the 1914 to 1918 war, the Liberal Prime Minister, Lloyd George, introduced a pension for people over 70 and some form of compensation for the people injured while working in industry. The basis of today's welfare states in Britain was laid in 1942 by a former director of the London School of Economics, Sir William Beveridge. He proposed a radical scheme for the abolition of poverty through a system of social insurance. But his proposal didn't stop there. He said that, in order to reconstruct British society on a more just and democratic basis, other evils had to be tackled. They were, he said, disease, ignorance, squalor, and idleness. After considerable political struggle, an Education Act was passed in 1944. It abolished school fees, it raised the school leaving age from 14 to 15, and provided for further education until the age of 18. In 1948, the establishment of the National Health Service gave every Briton the right to free medical, dental, and eye treatment.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
In Britain, the idea of the welfare state could be said to have begun with the Poor Relief Act in 1601. This acknowledged that society, as a whole, had a responsibility towards its weaker members, people who suffered as a result of circumstances that they could not control, such as illness or inability to work. Before that, religious orders were the only organizations to look after people who had no one to care for them. The Poor Relief Act was revised in the 19th century. In the years before the 1914 to 1918 war, the Liberal Prime Minister, Lloyd George, introduced a pension for people over 70, and some form of compensation for the people injured while working in industry. The basis of today's welfare states in Britain was laid in 1942 by a former director of the London School of Economics, Sir William Beveridge. He proposed a radical scheme for the abolition of poverty through a system of social insurance. But his proposal didn't stop there. He said that, in order to reconstruct British society on a more just and democratic basis, other evils had to be tackled. They were, he said, disease, ignorance, squalor, and idleness. After considerable political struggle, an Education Act was passed in 1944. It abolished school fees, it raised the school leaving age from 14 to 15, and provided for further education until the age of 18. In 1948, the establishment of the National Health Service gave every Briton the right to free medical, dental, and eye treatment.
This is the end of Listening Comprehension.